and I was just broken on the floor. And I just thought, I can't keep doing this anymore. I knew something was wrong, but obviously at 22 years of age, I had no idea what really was going on. And so I ended up trying to leave that. And every time I tried to leave, she threatened to kill herself. And eventually I said, I'll go on and do it. And instead of killing herself, she tried to kill me instead. I'm right, okay.
My name is Paul Harvey, and this is Life, Passion and Business. We're about helping you explore, finding your passion for life and the work that you do. But it's so much more than that. It's about finding clues to the big life questions. What does it mean to be successful? What is the meaning of life? If you're looking for more, then join me on this journey, where together we will discover through interviews, tools and tips, how to live life full of meaning, passion and purpose. My guest today is John Kenny, and our conversation is about dysfunctional relationships. It's about self-sabotage and living with faulty relationship models. This is why the world is filled with so many psychopaths and narcissists. Bear with me, the story does have a happy ending. Growing up, John had no idea what he wanted to be or do. The career support in school was not very helpful, and there was very little life guidance or support at home. No one was to blame for this, it was just how it was for many families growing up in the 1970s Britain. John's parents did their best, but they had a lot of unresolved issues of their own and did not have the life tools to support themselves, let alone their children. Consequently, John left school without much direction. That said, he did have one passion, athletics, and he was good at it. So at 16, this seemed to be the best route to take and led him to a 10-year career that involved competing at an international level. His events were the 100 metres, the 200 metres and the 4x4 relay. His best time was 10.4 seconds in the 100 metres. And if you're not a runner, I can tell you that is bloody fast. That is sprinting. Sadly, UK sports at the time was not really there for him. Things have changed now, thankfully. But in the 80s, there was no support or funding and you had to work while training. Added to this, John had a poor self-image and was in constant self-doubt. You see, he would not allow himself to be successful and he would sabotage a drink, women, clubbing. Well, you know, he was young and misdirected. While on holiday in Australia, John decided he would like to live there. But to get there, he needed a visa and a professional skill. Athletics did not meet the mark, so he sold his flat, packed in his job, and enrolled into university with a plan to become a teacher. But once at uni, he discovered he did not like teaching, but he did enjoy the psychology and counselling. He looked to see if he could transfer, but that was not an option. It was his brother who suggested the fire service was another route to the Australian visa. So he joined the London Fire Brigade. But for a sensitive guy with self-image problems, this was going to be a difficult environment for him. You can just imagine the strong characters and lots of one-upmanship. Whilst he'd enjoyed driving the engine, this clearly wasn't the place where he wanted to be, which was just as well as Australia changed the rules and firefighters were dropped from the visa list. Considering his next options, John's interest in psychology and counselling resurfaced. And so he started training in this area while still working for the fire service. The skills he learned helped him deal with his dysfunctional environment, and he ended up staying in the fire service for 12 years. Once his therapist training was complete, he started a private counselling practice and later became a full-time counsellor for the NHS. But even with all of that training and working in the job he was passionate about, he could not find happiness. It was a life coach that woke him up to the reality of his life. She says, "You're helping all these people with counselling, so why does your life still suck?" John realised his life had been defined by toxic relationships and abuse, and he was still living these patterns on repeat. It was this revelation that enabled John to turn his life around. Our conversation looks at attachment styles and how we build meaningful relationships. When you realise that research indicates 40% of the world have an insecure attachment style caused by circumstances and trauma, it's not surprising that relationships are difficult. And the chances are you are either in that 40% or you're in the 60% trying to deal with it. John's is a fascinating journey because he had the habit of picking the dysfunctional relationships that fitted his own picture of himself. But once he was able to rewrite that picture, his life began to work differently. Today, John is a relationship coach, fusing together his life experience, counseling, coaching, and NLP skills to create his own coaching model, the IRC for relationships. He is passionate about his work and it really feeds his soul. He went on to write a book, The People Program. He was invited to film a documentary and has recently launched a podcast called The Relationship Guy. I enjoyed this conversation lots and we did well to contain it within the time. I hope you discover something useful. And if so, please leave a comment. So, John, welcome to the program today.
Hi, Paul. Thanks for having me.
So tell me, what's been the story for you? How did it all unfold? How did you get to where you are now?
I originally had no idea what to do. I was one of those kids who grew up never knowing what they wanted to do. I didn't even have any career advice at school. My parents weren't very good at guiding me in any kind of shape or form. And I was pretty kind of just going through life. And then at 16, I discovered athletics and I wanted to become a full-time athlete. I ended up running for Great Britain, but as a sprinter, and then did that for about 10 years. And then
hang on, don't run off on that one. That sounds really important. I ran for Great Britain for 10 years. That just sounds quite
significant. Well, I ran for 10 years and I ran for Great Britain probably about half a dozen times or so.
So what was your race?
So I did 100 metres and 200 metres, but mainly when I ran for Great Britain, it was mainly for 200s and relays.
And what was the 200? What was your 100 metre time?
10.4.
That's bloody fast.
Yeah, it's pretty quick.
And 21 seconds. I mean, because like the world record is not that far under 9 these days, is it?
Well, it's 9.58, so it's a fair way off, to be honest.
But I mean, at that speed.
But at the time, it was a lot closer.
At that speed, I mean, yeah, I don't think for him to realise quite well that, you know, you think about 100 metres in 10 seconds, it means at some point you're travelling faster than 10 metres a second.
Mm.
It's just like, I can't get my head around that speed. Anyway, look, I'm getting geeky. you can tell I'm a runner, can't you?
I ran for Great Britain and then got several injuries and stuff and then realised I just really wasn't going to make it full time.
Yeah.
And then I became an adult who had no idea what they wanted to do with their life at that point.
Surely, didn't that sport help? Didn't that sport stuff help you get focus and that sort of stuff? And
it would have done if I was in a good space within myself, but I was still very much in an unhealthy relationship with myself at the time.
Uh-huh.
So I could have actually been a much better athlete. I could have been, I probably could have made a much better go of things if I'd have had a better relationship with myself.
I guess you're a man of a certain age, and I think you and I are both not that far off by the looks of each other, ourselves, and I suspect that this, the technology just wasn't there. You know, the knowledge about how to work with athletes just wasn't there. Because when you talk to modern athletes, what they do nowadays is just incredible compared to what
they do. Yeah, there wasn't even any lottery funding when I was around.
No.
So, I was working a full-time job and then training 6 or 7 times a week.
No. I mean, so I can remember running training. You know, when I was in school, I can remember being taught how to run. You just run. Well, how do you run?
Yeah.
There was no one gave you any idea about where to place your foot, how to place your foot, what anything about running. And yet my son did running a couple of years ago at school, and they were really thorough about teaching him how to run.
Yeah, I know a lot more now than I did when I was actually an athlete.
Yeah.
I listen to kind of the sprint coaches and stuff, even just talking on TV, and they explain a lot more about how to sprint than any of my coaches ever taught me to, or the information that was available at the time.
Yeah, coaching of the day was like, just move bloody faster. What's wrong with you? Yeah. So anyway, you obviously, as you said, you didn't have a good relationship with yourself, which was part of the issue.
No. So I used to self-sabotage a fair bit. Whenever I was running well, I would then do something which would take my focus away from the fact I was running well, and whatever that might be, drink, women, clubbing.
Yeah, I thought drink and women would come in there somewhere. I mean, what age were you at this point?
This was kind of in my late teens, early 20s.
Oh, yeah, well, it had to be, didn't it, really?
Yeah. I wasn't 100% focused on my athletics career. But when I was, like I said, when I was running, when I was focused and running really well, I would then do something that would sabotage my own success. And yeah, that carried on basically up until a few years ago, even, to be honest. That everything I kind of turned my hand to, I was full of self-doubt and wouldn't allow myself to have any kind of success in it. So yeah, that was kind of my first example of, you know, doing something really well that I didn't allow to go to its full capacity with.
So you got out of athletics and you you were now kind of going, what next?
What do I do? So I went to Australia that year, actually. I went to Australia for the first time and I thought, oh, I want to go and live in Australia. So I came back, sold my flat, packed up my job, decided to go to university to train to be a teacher so I could get on the professions list to go to Australia. And didn't like teaching. So that was that wasn't a great choice. But as it would happen, that's when I did my first introduction to psychology. I did an introduction to counselling. And that kind of sparked my interest in that area. So I tried to change my degree to a psychology degree. That didn't work. And during that time, my brother had joined the fire brigade in Essex. And he said, you can go to Australia as a firefighter. So that was my next port of call. So I ended up joining the London Fire Brigade and became a firefighter for 12 years.
Did you drop out of college then?
I dropped out of uni and applied to join the fire service instead. Became a personal trainer because while I was at university, I worked in the university gym and they put me on a couple of courses to train to be run the gym and do a bit of PT. So then I got another job working at a gym and did some extra qualifications while I was waiting to get into the fire brigade, just in case I didn't get in. And then I did. And then I was in the fire brigade for 12 years. But during that time, I realised I didn't actually want to be a firefighter. And then you couldn't go to Australia as a firefighter either. So the whole point of joining in the first place was redundant.
Oh, dear.
So I thought, well, if I'm going to stay in this country now, what do I want to do? And that's when I thought, actually, that psychology stuff was really interesting. So I decided to train to be a counsellor. So I did 4 years training and then took a diploma in counselling. And then in 2008, I started my own counselling practice. And then 2012, I got a job working for the NHS as a counsellor. So I left the fire service in 2013 and I worked alongside my private practice and working in the NHS as a therapist. And then in 2012, I went to networking and met a coach.
Mm.
And I had some sessions with the coach. I thought what she was talking about was really interesting. And she sort of said, like, so you're helping all these people with the counselling and stuff. Why does your life still suck?
Good question. Because probably
You're very unhappy. You seem quite unfulfilled. You're going through the motions. What is it? What's going on? And that kind of led me into the coaching path. And I found it so helpful in helping me to kind of understand that I was living my old story over and over and over again. That they enabled me to see that I could sort of write myself a new chapter. So I decided at that point that coaching was something I wanted to add to my repertoire of being able to help people and went off and did a diploma in coaching and consultancy. And that's kind of been the journey since. That was in 2012. And then in 2016, I left the NHS and focused on the John Kenny coaching brand. And I started to work extensively with relationships more or less at that point. I formed my own approach, which I call interpersonal relationship coaching, or IRC, which is what I want to try and catch on. And that is a fusion of counselling, coaching. I also trained as a hypnotherapist and NLP practitioner, did a psychology diploma. So I fused all of those together to try and help people to delve deep into their past and understand their relationships with themselves and with others and why they live the life that they're living at the moment and living unfulfilled relationships. And then last year, so that was 2020 during the pandemic, I had quite a lot of people contacting me and saying, I've been in lockdown, I've been on my own. I want to understand why I've been on my own. It's given me time to really reflect on the choices I've made. So then I decided to shift my focus in the relationship guy kind of was born at that point. And now I help people that struggle with intimate relationships that are successful in certain areas of their lives, but then they really struggle with this intimate side of relationships. And I help them to understand what that block to having a successful intimate relationship is all about.
Mm. So interesting journey. Mm. I want to go back a bit, really, because it's like, because again, we've jumped ahead quite fast. So what was the fire brigade like? Was there any passion involved in being in the fire? Was it exciting being involved in the fire brigade?
No, not for me.
Because lots of kids go, I want to be a fireman when I grow up.
But there are some people that absolutely love it. But I joined for the wrong reasons. I joined to emigrate. I didn't join because I wanted to be a firefighter. Mm. I joined because it was a means to an end. But
is there a lot of firefighting has been the fire brigade, or was fires?
I was based in North London, so we were very busy. We also had a specialist unit for RTAs called a fire rescue unit. So we used to go out to a lot of road traffic accidents,
I get you see some nasty stuff in that respect.
Yes, there's been some pretty gruesome stuff that I've been involved with I enjoyed driving the fire engine. But no, it was great. I mean, it taught me a lot. It taught me a lot about myself. It taught me that I was a very sensitive little soul when I joined the fire service as well. And I really had to grow a thick skin and not take things so personally. And I think that was my first lesson in kind of breaking away from some of my childhood stuff when I was in the fire service, because the first couple of years I really wanted to leave, because the banter and stuff is very near the mark. And if you are susceptible to reacting to it, they'll keep pushing you until you break.
I wonder what it is about service type environments like that that gets so like that. I wonder what that's about.
I think there's I wouldn't say toxic masculinity. That's not quite as far as it goes, but there are a lot of strong characters. So therefore there's a lot of strength, like people fight for dominance in the kind of arena. So therefore, there's a lot of male energy floating about. So there's a lot of one-upmanship. There's a lot of joking around. There's lots of throwing buckets of water over people and tricking each other and whatever it might be. And that wasn't an environment I was used to. I'd worked in insurance. I'd worked in retail. Yeah. So it wasn't something I was ever used to. And I went in there and really need to kind of to go, actually, this isn't, I struggled a lot emotionally. And obviously the work sometimes could be very stressful because of you wouldn't sleep because of you'd be up all night on jobs and stuff. And, it was getting used to doing shift patterns and all that kind of stuff was quite difficult as well. But it did, after I was in for 2 or 3 years, I thought, actually, you know what, I'm taking this far too personally. And I also embarked on my counselling training in 2004. So I'd been in the fire brigade about 3 years at that, 3.5 years at that point. And then that self-exploration really then helped to go, oh, okay, I can see why I'm reacting this way. I can see why this is getting under my skin. But eventually I just didn't really want to be a firefighter. Mm. And also it's one of those professions where you don't know where you stand, because anything can happen at any moment. And I'm more of I like to know a little bit more what I'm doing. I like to have my day a bit more structured.
Was there a pivotal moment in the fire service when you thought, no, this is it, I've had enough, I've got to go?
No, not really. No, I didn't really want to be there, but I needed to get myself into a space financially, I think, before I left. And then when the job came up in the NHS, so I was working, originally went part-time in the fire service, so I just did nights and weekends. And then when I got the job in the NHS, I kind of tried to keep that going for about a year of doing the 3 different jobs, and then realised I hadn't had a day off in about 8 weeks and I was absolutely exhausted. And then there were a few political issues going on in the fire brigade as well, which I was being dragged into, I was very uncomfortable with. And so I just rang the head office and said, what notice do I need to give? Thinking I need to give like 2 or 3 months. And they said, oh, it's 2 weeks. And I went, right, I'm handing in my notice. And that was it. And I was gone. And so I just focused then on trying to build the agency up, the private work. And then, like I said, in 2016, I ruptured my knee playing football. And I was sitting around for about 4 weeks, not really being able to do very much. And I thought, well, what do I want to do? Where am I right now? Is this really where I want to be? And that's when that's when I came up with the John Kinney coaching idea. I thought I want to take stuff online because I couldn't see clients because I was only offering face-to-face appointments at the time. And I really wanted to push the coaching a bit more. And in that time, I joined a couple of other organisations which were really promoting coaching. So I did a lot of training and extra training stuff. And I thought, I really want to focus on this now. And that was when I really just said, oh, I just want to do the coaching from now on, and handed my notice in at the NHS and put all of my energy into my business.
Well, what made you choose relationship coaching? Well, you know, why choose that area?
I think because I've always been in toxic relation or unhealthy relationships myself.
Sorry, I'm going to have to push on that one. How would you define what do you mean by toxic relationship?
Okay.
I think we need some details here.
So my first relationship when I left home was really abusive. So I had a difficult relationship with both of my parents, whereas they had a lot of issues of their own that weren't resolved. So they weren't able to really be there for me and my brother. And that led me to kind of create an idea, firstly, about what I deserved from people, mm-hmm. also how I saw relationships work. So they were always up and down. They were very inconsistent. Nothing good ever really lasted. And I became a bit of a people pleaser. So if I wanted any positive attention from my parents, I had to act in a certain way. And then I took that into my adult, well, I took that into my teenage relationships, and then I took it into my adult relationships. So the first person I actually had a proper relationship with when I left home had a lot of insecurities. So I was constantly trying to keep them happy, but clearly I could never keep them happy because they had a lot of issues that would never be resolved, no matter what I did. And they would be quite manipulative. They would coerce me into certain things. They treat me like a child. They push me all the time to try and prove how much I cared about them. And that, because I wanted to be loved, because I wanted to feel like I was making them happy, I would keep going and keep going and keep going and keep going until basically I was on the floor one day in the living room of our flat in tears. And I was just broken on the floor. And I just thought, I can't keep doing this anymore. Mm-hmm. I knew something was wrong, but obviously at 22 years of age, I had no idea what really was going on. And so I ended up trying to leave that. And every time I tried to leave, she threatened to kill herself. And eventually I said, I'll go on and do it. And instead of killing myself, she tried to kill me instead.
Sorry, I shouldn't laugh. It's not funny.
That gave me like the real kind of, oh, right, okay, I definitely need to go out.
I mean, I've heard it said there are three kinds of people in the world. There are narcissists, there are psychopaths, and there's everybody else. And the psychopaths at the moment seem to run most of the large companies. They seem to float to the top and end up in positions of power. And the narcissists there and them fight for contingency. And obviously everybody else sits in and tries to please everybody and tries to keep the peace.
Well, statistically, they research says worldwide. So I do a lot of work with attachment styles.
Yeah.
So when we grow up, we learn how to attach to people in either a secure way or an insecure way. And narcissism, psychopathy, they're extremes of insecure attachment plus, you know, other bits of things, generally through some kind of childhood trauma. But there's 40% of the world's population have an insecure attachment style. So there's a lot of people out there that would have struggled to one degree or another with their relationships as kids, which then has made them insecure as they get older and then really don't know how to have a healthy relationship. And I was one of those.
I think I'm probably in the same thing. I mean, I have healthy relationships now, but I am a people pleaser. I've always been a people pleaser.
Yeah. 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 That, see, my brother went the other way. My brother became someone who didn't really give a shit about anybody else, but would do his own thing and would create a lot if he wasn't getting his own way, where I would try and make everybody happy. So we grew up in the same environment, but our brain decided to deal with these things in completely different ways. So that's kind of where I was in my relationships. And then after that one, I was single I didn't have a serious relationship for about 6 or 7 years after. I kind of dotted in and out of relationships. Nothing ever really sort of lasted.
Well, it would be hard to recover from that, wouldn't it? I mean, when you get that, have a blow like that when you're 22, and you think it's your fault, which you probably did.
Yeah, I can't. There was a lot of self-blame. There's a lot of
absolutely. I mean, it's about you know we always put our hand up first. Most people put our hand. Yeah, it's my fault. Yeah, I'll take that one. Yeah.
Stephen, please, as they're very prone to taking responsibility.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll put our hand up first on that one, no problem. So, I can imagine it would take a long time to find yourself and to find confidence in someone else again.
Yeah, and then I went into another relationship and I found out she was cheating on me with her ex-fiancé.
Okay, that's another blow. That's another body blow.
Yeah, and then the next one I had after that was quite a serious relationship. She got depression, which again is not of no fault of her own, but then that made me feel very insecure. And then I went out with someone else who then ended up cheating on me with someone. So everybody I was choosing to have a relationship. So I'd met a lot of nice people in that time, but my brain was rejecting them completely.
You were picking the losers, weren't you, in some
respect? I was picking the ones that fed my idea of what relationships that I am. Generally what I would end up feeling was that I'm not good enough. And that was my kind of aim in relationships, was to come back to that space where I could fulfill my own self-belief that I'm not good enough. And again, I think that's the same with the athletics. You know, I was struggling with the core belief that I was never going to amount to anything, as well as that I'm not good enough. So therefore,
just thinking about it, your thoughts. Gosh, this is coming around. So a psychological episode. I hadn't considered this, but you know, your episodes, your experience of the fire service was the same thing, wasn't it? In some respects.
Yeah, I mean, that was massively toxic for the first couple of years because I was being abused.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I wouldn't call it, it wasn't intentional abuse. It was just the culture of the fire station that I was working at. But it was abuse. And it took me a while to get myself out of that space where I was allowing myself to be abused. And I was just like, I don't care about this anymore. I'm not going to allow this to get under my skin because it's pointless. And the less I reacted to their actions, the less they would then pick on me. And eventually I became a little bit of a recluse on my watch because I didn't fit the mold. In fact, they called me the station cat at one stage because I only came out of feeding time. But I was very happy. I was happy to go in there. I'd read my books. I'd do my studying. Or whatever I was doing, I would keep myself away because it wasn't the kind of atmosphere I was very comfortable with. But it was much better for me to kind of keep myself slight. One-to-one basis with people, everything was fine. But within the group environment, I would just feel like I was an outsider.
I'd say I would recognize that myself. I'm very good one-to-one with people. I mean, I do this stuff all day long. I'm really good at this kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. But I have to say, put me in a group of people and I'm not so great. It takes me a while to find my balance in a group of people.
Yeah. And that's kind of how I kind of went on to relationships, really. It was just because I'd been through a lot of experiences where I'd had a lot of unhealthy relationships. And even up and when until I got married. So I didn't get married until 2016, and I met my wife about 7 years ago. We separated during lockdown because even then I was still playing out an old repeated pattern. So I'd spent my whole life dating my dad and ended up marrying my mum because my dad was quite volatile. He was very insecure and anxious, and this is the kind of people that I'd end up having longer term relationships with. And my mum's a bit like me. She's like avoidant. So she doesn't really show too much emotion. She kind of withdraws from difficult situations. And that's the person I married. But then obviously two avoidant people getting together, we ended up just growing apart because we didn't know how to be with each other in a very close, connected relationship. Mm. And every time because I was doing a lot of self-development work, every time I was trying to move towards her, she was moving away from me. Mm. Because she didn't know how to be in a connected, deep relationship. And I was trying to improve myself and let go of my burdens and boundaries and stuff from the past. And every time I moved towards her, she'd move away. And eventually I just thought, I thought, I can't do this anymore. So then I moved away as well. And then we gradually just moved apart. And then through lockdown, we realised it really wasn't worth us being together, and we were still young enough to go off and find someone else, and so we decided to separate. But all of that experience now has led me into the space where actually I know exactly what I want from a relationship, and that's what I was trying to get in my marriage. I was trying to work on the things I actually really wanted from somebody, but I just had met the wrong person. So, and my supervisor in my therapy, she kind of encouraged me. She's been massive support and massively encouraging throughout my entire career in self-development. And she always said, you're really good at the relational stuff. You can really pick out the bones of what's going on with people in their relationships and why they're really struggling. So that also was encouragement for me to kind of invest a bit more kind of time into understanding that a bit more and then go down the relationship.
I guess you recognize it. You've seen so much of it now in terms of your own journey and people around you. You've now started to recognize it all.
Yeah.
And what is sad about this is that we don't teach any of this stuff early on in life. Just imagine if we could teach some of this stuff early on to teenagers.
Yeah.
They probably wouldn't understand it all, but if they could actually...
I wouldn't have done
that. Well, the difference is it's really hard
to... Whether I had a lesson or not as well is another
thing. It's hard to understand it until you feel it. That's the trouble, isn't it? Yeah. That's the real bummer of it.
Well, I've got a client at the moment. He's only 19. He's amazing, amazing kid. To be honest. I mean, he's come from a massively unhealthy environment at home, but the work he's doing on himself at such a young age is spectacular. I mean, I'd said to him yesterday, I'm so proud of you, and I hope you're proud of yourself, because it's so unusual for someone so young to take the responsibility for their own issues and not blame everybody else, which is where he was before we started to work together. But he's done such an amazing job over the last few months of us seeing each other that it's going to serve him so much better as he moves forward in life. Unable or aren't aware of the fact that they could get this help at an early age.
And that is the challenge though, isn't it, of being in a relationship when both parties are slightly damaged. Because there's obviously all that codependency around that.
Then
of course the difficulty is there's that, because of that codependency, there's a locking in process to prevent change. So as soon as one person tries to change, the other person pushes against that change to try and stop it happening.
Yeah, definitely. They're comfortable in that space. Like I said, I got together with my wife if I'd have been happy to stay in a disconnected relationship for the rest of my life, we probably would have stayed together for the rest of our lives, because we'd have both been happy in that avoidant, disconnected space. Whereas I became more and more aware, obviously through my own sort of personal development and working with my clients, obviously, that's not what I wanted, that I was still playing out something which was massively unhealthy for me and very unfulfilling. But again, I was still 40 something when that happened. So
I've been very lucky in that my wife and I met through personal development. So we met through a project that we were on, both on in personal development.
Right.
And so we have grown together over those years, both. Mm. And we've taken stops and starts. We've both grown together. And we both recognize where we came from, but we grew together. So it's actually worked out very well for us. But I can really see some people who get into personal development and then they look at their partner and look at themselves and go, how the hell are we together?
Yeah. When I did my counseling training, they called it the divorce course.
I'm not surprised.
But there were so many people that developed over those 4 years into completely different people than the person they were when they started. And that didn't, like you said, that didn't sit well at home. And the other person was like, oh, you're changing. And you're like, yes, that's right, I am changing. You coming with me or not?
I met a woman last year, a guest on another event, I think it was, and she was very sad at that time when I met her, and she's saying, I've just had to end a relationship this week, and I'm really sad about it. And I said, what was wrong? And she said, nothing. It was a wonderful relationship. I was really, really enjoying it, and we were perfect together. So I said, why stop then? She said, because he doesn't have any interest in developing himself, and I know I'm not going to be here in a few years, and it's just not going to work. I just know full well that it's going to be a resistance all the way through. And that's really hard for her to recognize the fact that she was with someone who she really loved, but recognized that there was no way it had any longevity in that relationship, because she was actually actively looking to change herself.
That's a very brave decision to make.
I think it's very brave, very brave, but very adult, I guess, and recognizing that where she wanted to go was not going to be, it was not going to survive.
I just want to point out that doesn't always happen. I mean, if there are relationships, and I've done relationship coaching with couples and stuff in the past, although I do focus more on individuals now. But a lot of the people that I do work with also, as they change, they change the dynamics of the relationship, which allows the other person to come with them on the journey. So even though you know, in a lot of cases, it might be that we change and the other person doesn't, and therefore it doesn't work anymore.
Well, that's it's the change, isn't it? Someone's got to be willing to go there. That's the point.
Yeah, yeah. And they need to be able to want to be in this space enough with you to be able to go, oh, you know what, this is quite a good journey for us to go on together, or you can, or they'll buy into the changes and they'll go, oh, you know, this is a good thing. And they'll come along with you. But until we actually make the changes ourselves, we're not going to know if they're going to be able to do that or not.
No, indeed. Well, it's a fascinating topic of conversation. Absolutely fascinating topic of conversation. And clearly, you've certainly made it a lifelong commitment to do it in terms of it's definitely part of your thing, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. I love it. It is my passion. It is my passion to understand people and to help people to understand themselves and others so that they can live the kind of life they want they to choose rather than maybe the one that they feel like they have to.
Do you know, I think that's the hardest thing that people very rarely do, actually. I think getting someone to sit down and say, what is it you want?
Mm.
Tell me what you want now, other than lunch.
Yeah. It is. Most people have a really good long don't want list. But they don't have a particularly spend much time thinking about what they do want.
This is why this podcast is here. This is part of the journey for me. It's because I recognised I didn't know what I wanted. If you said what is something that, what would make me happy? What's joyful? I don't know.
Mm.
And it's still a daily question for me. Where is it? It was like, what would be a perfect day for you? Well, most days are pretty good as it goes. But what would be really perfect? No, you got me there. A bit of randomness kind of helps, I think.
Yes, I think so too. Yeah, I mean,
there's nothing better than going somewhere, meeting someone you haven't seen for ages, and then going out and having a good old chinwag, or going to a restaurant. You know, that spontaneity is amazing to me, I think.
Yes, I think so. Yeah, the unknown is a good spacer.
It is. But let's go back to this thing about people not knowing what they want. I think part of that is because it's confusing what they want with what other people want for them, or what society thinks they should want.
Yeah, I think we work a lot in the shoulds, world of shoulds, don't we? There's like a lot of expectation. It's one of the first things I remember learning in therapy was shoulds. Can I swear on here?
Go on then, if you want to. Oh, that's not swearing. I've had an Australian on here. That's swearing.
Oh, okay. Shoulds are shit. That was one of the first things I remember learning, and I didn't really grasp that until I went into coaching.
Yeah.
And then as Tony Robbins says, people go around shoulding all over themselves.
It's brilliant, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, the funniest one I know of shoulds in a way, and I know I need to be careful with it, what things I say on his sentence, but you know, I know people that have, you know, that had their dream car, or they wanted, but it wasn't their bloody dream car. It was the car they thought was the dream car.
Mm-hmm.
And they get the flipping thing, and it's like, oh, God,
yeah,
it's not a good car at all.
Yeah. Again, we're always chasing. I mean, it might, you know, not everybody, but there's a lot of us, and I was one of those people that were chasing the next thing.
Yes.
If I have this car, I'll feel better. If I have this relationship, I'll feel better. If I buy this watch, I'll feel better. If I wear these clothes, I'll feel better. But again, it's all about that not really knowing what we want. It's kind of what I'm assuming that that's going to make me feel better because that's what everybody else does.
It seems like you've had a lot of people come to you during lockdown. It doesn't surprise me because the distractions have been taken away.
Mm, yeah, definitely. A lot of contemplating time. For people especially that have been spent a lot more time on their own, it was damaging for others that were stuck in toxic and unhealthy relationship spaces, couldn't escape and couldn't have their own space and think about what they really needed to do. But yeah, there have been a lot of people that have just been, why am I on my own? Why am I in this space by myself? Do I want somebody? And if I do, how do I make that happen?
But when you do have somebody in your life, what does that mean? Because it's like, you know, I mean, all right, there's the sex bit, fair enough. But once that bit's over,
yeah,
then what? I mean, and, you know, when you're a certain age, all right, there's kids when you're a certain age.
Yeah.
But when you're beyond kids, then what?
Well, there's a couple of studies, Reece. There's the Grant study, the Grant Glewick study, which is a 75-year study into the quality of life from Yale University. And they said the quality of your relationships is the most important factor in correlation to the quality of your life. Mm. So if you have quality relationships, and whether that's intimate relationship, friends, family, it didn't really sort of distinguish those. But it said the quality of your life is you know, it is definitely mostly affected by the quality of your relationships. And so therefore, if you have good relationships in your life, you're going to feel better. So if you're on your own, it only goes to say that your quality of your life isn't going to be as good as if you've got these good relationships with you. And also, I was reading something recently, and they did some tests, and they put people through stressful situations, and they had monitors on their brains to see which part of their brains triggered off when they were under stress. And what they noticed is that just having someone holding your hand while you were put through these experiences decreased your stress levels by 25%. And wow. That it didn't matter. They didn't have to say anything. All they had to do was sit and hold your hand. So there is definitely something about connecting with others which makes us feel better, makes us feel more at ease, more comfortable, less reactive to stress. So there's definitely a lot to be said from having someone that you feel connected with or safe with in your life in order for you to feel better about things.
Amazing. And not surprising, really, is it? I mean, it's just...
No. We are a species. We are a group species by default. Being part of a group and being connected to others meant survival in the past. So therefore, it's a deeply genetic, ancestral thing that's passed on from generation to generation to be connected with other people.
And the curse of social media does not actually make it any easier.
No, definitely not.
As I say, the curse of social media. Yeah, as me, a former digital marketer.
Yeah, I think it has a lot to, there are benefits, but there's a lot to be changed in order for us to kind of get back together. And
somehow we've got to learn tolerance again, haven't we, somehow? I wonder how we're going to do that.
Yeah, I think the problem with social media is, I think, like you maybe intimated, it makes people that have got negative views and want to wear those views, it makes them a bit braver in order to do so.
Well, I think that's fine, but I think what happens is, because it's the silo nature of it, we get so used to being in one sort of stream, and so when you see something outside of that stream, it looks really different. Whereas if you knew John well, and you knew that John plays football great, and you know that John likes a beer, and you know all these bits and pieces about John. He has got a bit of a strange viewpoint on this, but I'm prepared to accept that because he's a good football player. You know, suddenly you've got that other connection, haven't you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But if John just says shit on social media and that's all I know about him, it's like, it's something different, isn't it? And that's the problem. We don't have the context outside of...
That's the other problem with the social media is it shows you what it thinks you want to see.
Absolutely.
It doesn't know what you really want to see. It doesn't know who you really want to connect with. But maybe because you haven't liked one of their posts in the last 2 weeks, you are no longer connected with them. You're searching for them to see what they're up to.
Let's move on. I'm getting geeked out with this conversation with you and I today. We're having a nice conversation. So tell me, what is success to you? Because we've already touched on it in terms of success. Yeah. The danger of success is other people's success. What is success to you?
Success to me is being happy with my own lot. I've learned that I'm allowed success, which is something I never was really allowed in the past. What I want for myself has changed a lot over the last 3 or 4 years, mm-hmm. as far as, you know, what I'm going to allow and what I'm aiming for. But, you know, success for me is sometimes just making myself a coffee. You know, I love making myself a cappuccino. And to me, that gives me such a sense of peace and enjoyment that's a success because I'm in a good space. But as you know, my professional life, maybe this kind of flows into one of your other questions. But I want to help as many people as possible.
And it does its contribution, but we can go to that. Yeah, that's fine.
Exactly. So for me to be successful means that I'm touching as many lives as I possibly can. And that's why I go out and do things like this. And I'm actually going to be starting my own podcast sometime this year. But I want to kind of spread the message as much as I possibly can that you can live a life that you want to live rather than one that you... And I think that will be my ultimate success is... just leaving something behind for people to be able to say, okay, let's follow what this guy said because we know that it's going to be good.
It is though, isn't it? I mean, we all, end of the day, we all want to live a good life, and defining what that good life for us. That I think that is the issue, though. Very few people take the time to actually define what a good life means to them.
And enjoy and taking little pleasures such as making a cappuccino. You know, it's not all about how much money you've got or where you live. The successes can be very small. You know, so it's again, everybody needs to kind of think of, like you said, for themselves, what does actually success look like? And can they take pleasure in the day-to-day things rather than just having this big idea about what that might look like eventually? Because most of the time when we aim for something, we don't really, like you said earlier, allow ourselves to really enjoy it when we get there. And we don't
One
take
of
the
my
time
great
to ask.
pleasures, particularly, I mean, my pleasure always has been this way, but is cooking. I just really enjoy cooking a good meal. And one of the things that I struggle with is when a meal doesn't fit my picture. That's not good. You know,
Okay.
so I
You
have a
understand
picture.
if it doesn't taste nice.
Well, but that's the taste nice. You see, that's the point. My picture is I create something and I have a picture of what it's going to be like. When I don't get there, I mean, so last night I made a curry last night and it was absolutely spot on. It was absolutely as I planned it to be. And I was like, that's nice.
Success.
Success. Sold. Bit like with coffee, really.
It is. If I make a nice cappuccino, I'll savor every moment.
Yeah, absolutely. So look, what's the one question that you want people to ask you?
Can I change my life?
Good question. Can I change my life, John? How would I go about doing it?
Yes, you can. You just need to understand how you've got to this point.
I thought you were going to have the answer. You mean got to go and look myself, haven't I?
Need to look at yourself, yes.
Oh, I thought I got away with that one.
Yeah, the key in the work that I do, especially and the stuff that's worked for me, is just saying, okay, I know where I've come from, I know why I do this, I know why I
Okay,
think.
key tool. Let's have it. Is there a key tool that someone can start with? Where can they? I mean, obviously, they come and talk to you is a great start, but you know, before they come and talk to you, what's a good tool they could try and
I'd
use?
say, do you notice patterns in your life? I think if you can think about, so maybe two things. Notice your patterns, and I think something we've already touched on is what's your want list. So what do you notice that the things that you do in your life or the things that happen in your life seem to have, even though if you might think they're kind of randomly connected, it's likely to be a pattern
Can you
that
give
you
an example
find.
of a pattern so someone can see what you mean by
Yeah,
pattern?
so I mean, let's stick to relationships because that's where I am. If you find that you attract a certain type of person, so as like a people pleaser generally attracts a taker. You know, if I'm a people pleaser, I'll attract somebody into my life who likes to take from me because our energy is going to meet in a very simple place. I like to give, you like to take. At the beginning of a relationship, that's going to be amazing. The problem is, psychology-wise, eventually the person who loves to give will get resentful because they're not getting anything in return and they'll run out of energy and they'll then say, well, why are you doing this? And why don't you ever give me anything? And well, we got together for this reason in the first place. And generally, someone who likes to take, unless they've got narcissistic disorders or another personality disorder or some mental health issues, they feel uncomfortable taking all the time as well. So they'll start to resent the fact that you let them take all the time. And they'll struggle in that space because they'll take advantage of you. Most people don't really want to do that. It doesn't sit well that they can all, because there's no boundaries and people love boundaries. They love to know how far they can go. And if you don't know how far you can go, it plays with your mind. So I think understanding that. So if you can see, okay, there's a pattern, the people that I attract into my life, I always end up feeling A, B, C, and D. Therefore, there's something that must be going on in my subconscious, in my choices, in what I'm doing that allows this to keep coming. And to figure out what that is, if you can just notice what those patterns are, then you can start to work on, okay, well, if that's my pattern, why would that be happening? And then once we figure that out, we can
I
start
think
doing something.
patterns play out in jobs as well. Patterns play
Oh,
out
everything.
in terms
Yeah,
of
generally.
in jobs where you take a role and then you kind of like it doesn't work out for you or something else.
Yeah. And interestingly, I've worked in this field for many, many years now. And I'd like to do a research study on it, and maybe someone already has, and I don't know about it. But there seems to be a correlation between how good your childhood was relationship-wise within your personal relationships as you get older, and then how well you did at school and how well you do at work.
It'd be hard to measure that lot, I think. Without
it would be very hard to measure that. But there seems to be
a very invasive study or very, very...
But I've noticed, especially in the last...
Though, I would have thought the 7-Up camp, the 7-Up project probably has done that.
Yeah, maybe. I think that would be something interesting maybe to look at, because it's just something that dawned on me a few weeks ago.
Project, for the sake of my American friends, 7-Up, I think, was a project where they took some children from the age of 7 and they've been to see them every year for the last... Every 5 years, or is it... Every 7 years. That's right. Every 7 years for the last however many years. It's a long time. I mean, they're my age, so they're in their... I guess they're in their late 50s now. So, yeah, I mean, it's been an amazing journey. And some have pulled out the program.
Mm.
And what was amazing is the ones that you thought were really going to be really successful ended up to be the ones that absolutely hit rock bottom. Like the ones that were going to be the accountants or what have you ended up really, really struggling.
Mm. Yeah, and I think it'd be interesting to see what...
But I guess what would have happened in that one is they wouldn't have done the measurements that you need. So, you know, they wouldn't have had the family measurements done.
But yeah, there does seem to be something that plays out with the people that I speak to. Mm. And I can see it myself, actually. I can see what my school life was like. And I can see how I fitted that into my work life up until really I became a coach and sort of changed that. When I was in an environment of working with different people, I took up a very similar space to the one that I took up in school. So I was moderately successful. I kept myself to myself, but I did what I needed to do to get by. And my school life was very much like that. And my work life was very much like that as well. And my relationships, like I said, personal relationships have very much resembled my relationships with my parents, my brother and other people as I was growing up.
Do you know, I had a friend I knew when I was at school, not school, he was a family friend, but I knew him for years and years and years, and I didn't see him for a while. And I know exactly what you mean, because I went to see him when I was in my mid-20s and he'd married his mother. The woman looked just like his mother.
Right, okay.
And had the same characteristics as his mother completely. And he's like, oh, wow.
Yeah.
We weren't going to say anything.
No, nobody really wants to hear that, do they?
No, don't, do they?
Well, I did it. I married my mum, but maybe not. Again, she was about the same height as my mum, but she's definitely similar characteristics. Mm,
yeah, fascinating, isn't it? Mm. Oh, well, the interesting bits about humanity and being human. I don't know.
Definitely. Very complicated, complex. But once we understand how we work, we can also say, okay, well, if I work that way, someone else must work in their own way. And that really helps us as well to be able to go, okay, let me take a step back and try and figure out why this person might be doing what they're doing. And then I can manage that in a much healthier way for myself, rather than buying into the behavior like you were doing when you drop your bombs into these meetings. It's like, you know, they've definitely got something going on the way they're reacting. And you can go, okay, I wonder what's going on for that person because of the way they're reacting. Now, I don't need to be involved personally in this, and I cannot take it personally, which unfortunately we have a tendency to do as well. So, yeah, but by figuring out yourself, it gives you a great insight into how everybody else might be ticking over too.
I think my greatest thing is that, you know, we've come so far as a species now. We understand so much about how we interact and how we do these things and all these issues. What I don't get is why we don't expect more from our leaders, why our leaders are allowed to be leaders without having done this kind of work.
Mm.
You know, if all our leaders were, you know, had to do this kind of work, then you wouldn't have had a narcissism running America.
No,
in America, it just wouldn't have been allowed.
It reflects the population, doesn't it?
It's weird that we don't have any measurements on this.
I think it's like 89% to 94% of people just go around doing what they do. There's only a very small percentage of people, which might develop the world for such a long time. You think there must be so many more people like us out there, but the majority of the population just live life the way that they think it needs to be, and it's not the majority of people that really go, oh, that's not right.
Well, look, this has been a fantastic conversation. How do people get in touch with you if they want to? And what sort of people need to get in touch with you?
Yeah, so anybody that wants to explore the possibility of finding a relationship that they never had before, something deeply connected, something that's going to be of quality, something that's going to make them happy and fulfilled, then do get in touch. If you do struggle with the toxic and unhealthy relationship areas that you're in already, I can still kind of work with you on that area as well. So just visit to www.johnkennycoaching.com and connect with me on social media. Send me a message and we'll have a chat.
So are you, which channels are you on?
I'm on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram and LinkedIn.
Oh wow, all of them. Not quite all of them.
There's a couple that I haven't got into and I'm probably not going to bother.
No, I probably wouldn't bother
either. There's enough to be to think about to try and kind of keep my presence going on all of those things.
As I said, recovering digital.
Yeah, the website's probably the best. It'll give you a better insight.
Have you got a book planned out of all of this or you've got one out?
I've got a book out already. Came out a couple of years ago called The People Program.
Wow, lovely.
It's How to Overcome Your Blocks to Success. The first half of the book explains a bit more about my story and mm-hmm. how I learned to be me and how I learned to do relationships and my blockers to being able to see things through and get what I want.
So that's on Amazon, I take it?
The program takes people through the sort of quick questions to ask themselves in order to be able to find their own answers, really.
Wonderful.
So that's available via the website. And also my documentary is available by the website as well.
We never got a chance to talk about your documentary.
Yeah, but it's all on there. It's called Forget Me Not. It's about the parts of our child self that we discard because it doesn't fit when we're growing up. So when we get older, you know, we might feel that we act a certain way which doesn't feel comfortable or natural for us that we reject. And it's that kind of personality that maybe comes out when we've had a few drinks. And we let ourselves go a little bit more. We allow a little bit more of ourselves to be seen. Mm-hmm. So it's about those kind of repressed self stuff, you know, that we need to kind of bring
in. How did you get to make a documentary?
So I was at the Best You, which is a kind of self-development show in London. Mm-hmm. And some TV producers, production agency came up and said, we're really interested in what you just spoke about. Would you like to turn it into a documentary? So that was that, really. So yeah, that's pretty straightforward. So we ended up getting together and structuring the documentary and made that a couple of years ago too. So it's all on the website, so it's probably the best place if you want to find out. And my YouTube channel is about, I've got about 60-70 videos on there as well, which talk about a lot about relationships. Wonderful. And mindset and how to kind of do things to help yourself.
Well, look, all of those links will be available at the website Life, Passion and Business. You can find it in under John's podcast there, so do check it out there. And so do get in touch with John. He's a great guy. Really enjoyed our conversation.
Yeah, me too. We're gonna talk for hours, I'm sure.
I'm sure we probably could. John, so the final question I have for you, the final thing I ask everybody on this podcast is, what is the meaning of life for you?
Oh, well, shall I, relationship related, I think, again. Because of being someone that's never had an awareness about deeper connection until the last few years, I would say is to be deeply connected with yourself and deeply connected with other people.
Sounds fair enough to me. John Kenny, thank you so much for your time today and being with me. It's been a wonderful conversation. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
All the best. And that was Life, Passion and Business with Paul Harvey and my guest, John Kenny. If you'd like to reach out to John, you can find him everywhere. His website is johnkennycoaching.com. There is the book on Amazon, The People Program. His podcast is called The Relationship Guy. He's on LinkedIn, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and on YouTube. During our conversation, we also mentioned the Grant study, which you can find on Wikipedia. And I think we also mentioned the documentary 7-Up, which you can also find by doing a Google search. So if you are struggling with relationships, do reach out to John because he is an amazing guy. Anyway, all those links will be found at the website lifepassionandbusiness.com. And while you're there, do check out the resources tab to see the support that could help you on this journey that we call life.
In other news, the weekend podcast was called Perks and Passion, which is my reaction to what they're calling the Great Resignation. It's worth a listen, just 10 minutes. That's it from me this week. As always, do support your content creators and podcasts with likes, follows and shares, because it helps you find good podcasts like this one. Thank you so much for your time and attention, and I'll catch you next time. All the best.